Stop. Let's have a chat to Michael Kent. How are you, Michael?
Yeah, good, thanks, Michael.
Mate, I've read this opinion piece. I love your opinion pieces that you write on RSN's website because you are open, honest, and to the point. You don't pull any punches, and you know better than anyone because you, with your fellow trainers, are at the coalface. You buy these horses, you train these horses, and you love these horses. What do you think is the major issue with the amount of horses we have in Australian racing and trying to find them a happy home post their careers?
Yeah, I think what's happened in the industry in the last 20 years is we've had this massive thing of the sales keep going up and up and up. So people are just breeding horses just for sale. So they're not caring about their race life, and they'll do anything to get that horse to that point. So it seems remiss of us as trainers. We want to buy this great big physical colt, but to get that horse there, you've force fed him excess carbohydrate, which is detrimental to his skeleton. So you get all these skeletal issues when you try and grow a horse so fast. When you go to Japan and even in Europe, you see the yearlings, they're smaller and slighter, and you think, what are we doing? You know, we're selling horses in January. They're 17, 18-month-old horses, and they're 500 kilos, you know. And, of course, then it's a hard one because the breeder has spent a big money on a big service fee, and the horse might come out with a bent leg or windswept. Instead of that, the old days, that horse would be knocked on the head. Now they'll put them in casts, they'll put screws in their joints, they'll do knee strips, all these things to get that yearling to the sales. And when it brings around 1,000, they sort of have a sigh of relief, thank God I got out of that. So it's not an easy fix, but I do think as a collective, Australian breeders, we should be proud of our horse. We should be proud of our breed. Oz Horse promotes our breed, but why are we going to Europe and buying horses, and America and buying horses, and Germany buying horses? Why aren't they buying them off us? We just don't have longevity in our horses anymore. When I first started off training, you'd race your two-year-olds, and they'd still be around an eight-year-old. That doesn't happen anymore, and I'm sure it's the yearling sale prep that's hurting them. And we do have a penchant for breeding from anything, as you know. So a bent-legged filly that would want a roared will still go to stud. A couple of years ago, Emmeline Hill, who's the geneticist that started Equinone, she believes she discovered the roaring gene. Now, you know yourself, we would never buy a grade 3 scope, yet the sales companies pass a grade 3 scope, so we'll never buy one, so every yearling gets to go scope multiple times at the sales. But there's certain sidelines that are definitely throw it, and she discovered that gene. I had a meeting with Jen Hughes and her at the sales, and I said to Jen, I said, that's where you need to start, I think. Why don't we breed the roaring gene out of the Australian thoroughbred? Wouldn't that be a fantastic thing to do? We've mapped the genome of the horse, so the money in welfare, I think, should be spent on trying to breed better, more durable, sounder horses, because there's just way too much wastage. And at the end of the day, you just cannot rehome all these horses. They're just not suitable for the pursuits that we're doing. I know there's been a lot of money spent on the rehoming, all that, but it's the start. Like, you know, let's breed less and breed better and be proud of our horse. And wouldn't it be nice if the English were coming to buy our horses instead of us buying their horses? I mean, that's where I'd like to see it get to, because we're doing ourselves such a disservice breeding poor quality animals that look big and physical but don't last. But instead of the breeders getting the money that we spend in England, those breeders here in Victoria or Australia should be getting the money we spend in England on older horses.
So,
and I just think we're going in a terrible way.
In your article, you say we breed about 12,500 horses a year. What do you think is the optimum amount of horses that we should be breeding each year?
Oh, look, I think you could really make it. Like, over a period of a decade, if we bred out the faults in a thoroughbred, like any other breed have done, if we bred the Australian thoroughbred, bred faults out, and we didn't put horses to start that carried bad hereditary genes, it would only take a decade or so, and we might be the most sought-after racehorses in the world because we'd be the soundest. I wouldn't have an idea of the exact number, but it could be a lot less for sure, you know, because there's so many horses that just don't make it to the track. And it's usually the big, expensive colts, you know, that, you know, I know James Harron was pushing for horse sales to be earlier. They wanted the sales earlier so he could have two preps going into a slipper. So the shift away from Easter to classics become a thing. But what we have to do to those yearlings to get them to grow that quick to be looking like racehorses that did in January and February is not good for the longevity of the horse. And that's where the mistakes are being made. So the number, I'm not sure, but I can tell you now, there's so many of those big physical colts that just never race. They're million-dollar colts that just never even go to the races. They end up with humeral stress fractures, tibial fractures. Every trainer will tell you they get knee soreness. I've never seen so much cortisone being used in racing since the last decade. Before I went away overseas, you hardly cortisone a horse knees. You know, they're sounder. So we're definitely doing something wrong, and I'm convinced it's the growing out that trying to grow a horse just for sale and not thinking of its race day future.
So how can you rectify that then, Mick? Because we know that the breeding business is the billion-dollar industry. There is so much money at stake for all of these large breeders and those people who are trying to sell these horses.
Well, they're making a killing out there at the moment. Surely they've got to have some responsibility with the welfare. We're all taking it on the welfare very seriously. We're taking it responsibly. We're trying to rehome our horses, do our best we can. I think they're the ones that need to step up to the plate there, I'm convinced. And don't breed out of roarers. Don't breed out of bleeders. Let's just spend some money on the genetics of the animal and see if we can't breed better. And let the stud book, why can't the stud book get involved here, or Ozhorse, who is promoting our thoroughbred? Collectively, we need to be better, because welfare is not just an issue for trainers and owners. It's got to be an issue for breeders as well. So I think they need to set up the plate and stop just, you know, if a horse has got a roaring gene, why would you spend 150 mares to him 3 to 3 years in a row? They sold them, they're out of the stay, and then move on. But where are all these horses that have got that can't breathe properly? My vet does, Stuart Delante, he would do 2 or 3 roars a week. It's ridiculous the amount of horses that we have roaring. And when a lady approached the head of welfare to say, we can find that gene, let's do the DNAs on these horses going to start and say, no, it carries that gene now. Whether it throws it or passes on or not, I don't know, but I think there definitely needs to be some money spent on the research in that. And we should be breeding the horses like we used to. Good horses that can handle hard tracks, durable horses that lasted for a long time. And we won't have to spend $120 million a year in Europe buying horses to fill our welter fields, you know, or our handicap fields. It seems we're going about it the wrong way, but the sales obviously have been massively going up and up and up. But what you're paying for is you're taking a high risk of that horse, you know, going sore. That's how I see it.
Because there's been a lot of talk about that we are thin at the top end, and that's why we are going to Europe, as you said. But you think that's more, not so much because horses are getting bought over in Hong Kong, or we don't have that many good horses that are being produced, but a lot of them are unsound and not getting there.
We just don't get up older horses, do we? We do not produce older horses anymore. Very few of Australian bred horses. You look at any of those open handicaps. Well, there's a case in point. The Vobis Gold Stayers on Saturday, there'll be 6 or 7 runners in it, you know. If it was an open handicap, it'd be predominantly European bloodstock. So where are our older horses? We used to have good weight for age horses that raced for years. It was just the way we reared them, I'm convinced. And I'm convinced there's certain sire lines that probably should be bred out that carry bad faults. And I just think that's where some money or some research should be spent. So when I go to the sales market, why should I have to look at x-rays? When I go to Easter sales, why should I have to look at x-rays and scope every horse? Why shouldn't I go there full of confidence that horse will have a grade 1 or 2 scope and his x-rays are clean? That's how I would see it.
How do we compare to overseas?
Well, I think, I don't know about comparing overseas, I think we're breeding, well, we're not getting older horses, are we? We're buying them out of Europe. So Europe don't push their yearlings quite as hard. When I went to the yearling sales there a couple of years ago, I thought they looked a lot slighter. And the Japanese actually don't give them a sales prep, which is where when you take a yearling out of the paddock where he would be running naturally and exercising every day, you put him in a, they put him for a yearling sales prep, they put him in a box for 12 weeks and hand hawk him. So you make him sedentary. So straight away, his skeleton is going to demineralise. And then you feed him as much as you can get him to make him as big as you can. So that's where the problem is. You wouldn't do it to a human athlete and expect him to be a good athlete at the end. So, you know, we don't want the fat kid laying on the couch eating potato chips to make an athlete. And then, of course, the poor old trainers, you know, they go spend a lot of money on it and syndicate the horse and they deal with it. And I've seen it myself, you know, horses that have knee issues now, they're just softer bone. They're just not bred as well. And I think genetics, we can. I'm sure we can. If we had a serious look at ourselves, we could do a lot better. Now, we don't want to be comparing ourselves to overseas. I think we should lead the way. We're going to lead the way on this CT scanning and all the bone stuff that we're doing with these pre-fracture pathologies. I think we're going to lead the world in that. I think the CT scan are going to come to Cranbourne. I think they should be at every racetrack, educate the trainers, and we could lead the way in that and stop, nearly eliminate fractures on racetracks, which is our worst look, I think.
Mm.
And breeding better is going to be the next thing.
You mentioned in your article that in Germany they've got a lot stricter criteria. For those who don't know, what is, in fact, the criteria they have the types of horses they breed over there?
So they have what they call an A stud book, basically. And if you want to be in that stud book, they have a committee of people who you have passed a performance criteria, a confirmation criteria, and you can't have had any surgery as a foal, or you can't roar, or you can't have bled. So those are the horses that they're putting in their A stud book. Now, I would suspect trade practice would stop people breeding from anything. You know, we're a free country, you can do what you like, and there's always going to be an outlier where a horse has, you know, a defect but is a successful racehorse. There's always going to be that, but it's so detrimental to the breed in the end. I think if we did the same thing, we had what I call an A-class stud book, and if to fit that, there's a committee of people appointed to have a look at that horse on confirmation, performance, and make it fit to go to stud. And I think that should be for sires and dams. And if a sire carries a roaring gene that he's passing on, why can't it have an R beside his name? Why shouldn't we know that? If you're sitting a metre stud and the horse has been a roarer previously and we didn't know about it, I think it should be advertised, which might devalue that horse. That might be the starting point. But I'm sure there's smarter guys than me that could sort it out. But we have a stud book. We have a big company called Oz Horse who promotes our thoroughbreds. We only have one market for our thoroughbreds. That's Asia. Even the Qatarians and Saudis don't come down and buy, you know, they buy out of Europe all the time, that four-year-old sort of 80, 90 rated horse to fill their fields for their carnival. They never come here shopping, and I think they should be. I think that we've only got one market, and that's Asia, and they pick the eyes out of it, as you know, and they're probably pushed along because there's a lot of Australian trainers up there as well.
Mm.
So anyway, I just think that we could do so much better, breed more specific, have less wastage, and then the rehoming thing becomes actually realistic. At the moment, it's not, I think.
Just to clarify for those who may not be aware, what actually is roaring when you talk about that from a horse, and how much of a hereditary trait is that?
Well, it's very hereditary. So it's a laryngeal hemiplegia. It's when their larynx fails and falls across their throat. So you would have heard horses having wind surgery all the time. So when we scope and we talk about grade 1, 2 and 3, grade 1 is where their larynx opens fully, perfectly abducted. Grade 2, it may be slightly asymmetrical. Grade 3, which they pass at sales, well, I won't buy the grade 3. And then you as a client of mine said, we're not going to buy a yearling. You don't want to buy a grade 3 roarer because grade 4 is a fail. And when they're grade 4 roarers, they need surgery. And the surgery is it's reasonably successful in some, but there's a lot of health issues post the surgery. And like, why should I go to Easter Sale and actually have to scope every horse because I don't want to buy a grade 3? So we're breeding that in the breed. There's certain sirelines that carry it. And I'm sure if you did DNAs on these horses, and Emmeline was right, she discovered that gene, we could breed it out of our, in a decade, we could breed it out of our population of horses. And wouldn't that be a great thing, you know?
So do you think, we've now got John Massara, who is the biggest breeder here in Australia, who has been elected as the independent chairman for Racing Australia. Now, some people might say he's a bit conflicted, but what would you like to see from, as you said, the stud book, Racing Australia, in regards to this?
Well, John would agree. I think John would agree. I think he has to be aware of the welfare issues, especially in his position. I would think he'd be all over it. They're buying land and putting racehorses in pig paddocks just to retire them. Wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to buy thousands of acres to put horses in? I'm sure he would feel the same way. John's been a very good breeder over the years. He's one of the few breeders that breeds a bit of strength into his horses. I think he's sort of gone to the Japan and a bit more stoutness, not just pure speed. I hope he's successful with some of the Japanese horses. So we do need some more strength in our horses. That gives us some horses that can run a bit further and last a bit longer. But I'm sure he would agree that we could be better at what we do with breeding, and some research money could be spent on the genetics of horses and make the Australian thoroughbred the best in the world. That's what we should be aspiring to.
And you mentioned the end of life cycle as far as a racehorse is concerned, and the rehoming. I know Racing Victoria everywhere in Australia putting a lot of money into retraining, rehoming, but do you think with the amount of horses that we've actually got, that is unrealistic at this point in time, that every horse can find a home?
Well, it is, because they're a great athlete, but the people's purpose bred horses now for sport. So you won't see a thoroughbred in the dressage arena. He won't compete with a warm blood, okay? He was specifically bred to do that discipline. Same with show jumping. The warm bloods are so much better at show jumping than thoroughbreds, but RVL are putting on a class at most shows now worth 20,000, so the show jumping boys will carry one thoroughbred just for that class, but it won't amount to much. They seem to do excelling at eventing, you know, because they have the stamina to in the cross country, but people are still jump. We sent to the Rio Games, we sent four warm bloods from Australia as our Olympic team. So I don't think it's a thoroughbred going to Europe, to Tokyo this year, jumping in a team. So they're not. People are specifically breeding these horses now, so they don't fit everywhere. One in a thousand might be a show horse, good enough looking to be a show horse, and so they become riding horses. But you can't find that many homes for them. And of course, a lot of horses are retired, sore, as you know. They're sore or they've got some issue. So I just think, let's go to the start, breed a better horse that's going to last longer, less wastage, and the ones that do retire are retiring sounder, so they do have a more of a life left after. But I just think it all looks good on paper, what they're doing, but there's a lot of horses to rehome, I think, and I don't know if they're always going to find a good result. Like Pacadali wasn't a good result, was it? That's not a good result for that horse. There's no way you could look at it and authentically really believe that that was a good result for poor Pacadali to keep continuing racing these issues. But, what do you do with him,
Well, it's we need people like yourself, Mick, because we can't put our head in the sand. We can't ignore this. It needs to be discussed and debated. And I know Racing Victoria are doing a lot. We'll have a chat to Jen Hughes next week on the program to find out a little bit more. I'd be fascinated to get her thoughts on what you are saying here about the breeding. We'll even chase up the breeders. I know Matt Stewart's going to come on with some news, and he's spoken to Tom Riley from Ausbred as well. So it's good to put it out there, Mick, and it gets the debate keeping, I suppose, momentum with equine welfare, which is what is the most important thing. Hey, just on a quick topic as well, Mick, before I let you go. Next week, I've got Greg Carpenter coming up after 9 o'clock. Race-free week. Are you for or against it?
I think the time off for participants is a great idea. I think what went wrong here was they had a poor selection of race meetings at the end of the week they're stopping, and they've got a poor selection of races at the start of the week. Maybe they could tweak it, and they could have had two or three extra meetings this weekend instead of Mildura and a half a jumps meeting at Stale. So they could have had some more meetings on the week, and then people wouldn't be so worried about missing the week's racing. To give people time off, you probably need to get them 2 weeks to get them 4 days off, because, as you know, we all have to work the horses. So it hasn't worked in that regard. And people are thinking, well, I'm coming to work, I may as well have a horse racing. But the programming was really poor either side of the week off. I think if that was fixed, that may help. But I would be always for a Sunday off. I think Sunday track work's not open. They always seem to send us to Ballarat on a Sunday in July. 4 Sundays off in July, I think, would work better, because the jocks can have a beer, go and see their kids play sport the next day, don't have to get up and look at the scales and say, I've got to lose 3 kilos and drive to Ballarat in the middle of July. I think a Sunday when track work's off, I think that's the best day to give everybody a day off. I don't like Sunday racing for the winter at all. It's a real pain, but no one wants to go. Even the staff don't want to go half the time. Mm. But I think the concept's worth investigating, giving people some time off, but just probably wants tweaking, because what happened this time was the main thing was the program was so poor either side of it, I think, and people are missing out and running.
Mick, always great to get your opinions on racing's biggest issues. Appreciate your time.
Cheers. Thanks, Mike.